Perfect. Thank you. Okay, thank you, everyone. So I'm going to actually call the meeting to order at 10:02 a.m. on the 19th of September. And I appreciate everyone's time for joining us today. We're going to be speaking about food systems and food insecurity in our region. And we have three wonderful speakers here today that will be addressing some of the specific issues to these matters in our area. So I'm going to start out though with the agenda, since this is our regular Human Services Coordinating Council meeting. So I'm going to call for introductions. So I'm going to just go around the room as I see this in the virtual room, and if you could just announce who you are and who you're your name and who you're with, that would be very helpful. You can unmute yourself. So the first person I see on my screen is Kelly Davila.
Yes, hi, I'm Kelly Davila, Dana Haven.
Wonderful, thank you. I see Paul Shipman.
Good morning, Paul Shipman from Connecticut Food Share.
Thank you. Allison Nadeau.
Good morning. Hello, everyone. Allie Nadeau, Executive Director of Amplify.
Thank you. I see Joseph Listro.
Good morning, everyone. Joey Listro, New Britain Roots.
Chloe Ann Bobrowski.
Hi. Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Chloe Ann Bobrowski. I am an education manager with the Department of Education. I am on the Regional Human Services Coordinating Council that meets twice a year, but this is my first this council meeting today. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining. I see Matt. I don't know your last name. Matt, you're coming up as a guest.
Matt Hillman. Vernon Social Services, also a member of CLAT.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Camila Hillian?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good morning. Camila Hillian, Town of Bloomfield, Social and Youth Services.
Thank you. Allison Maynard?
Good morning, everyone. Allison Maynard from Mansfield Human Services.
Thank you. And now I'm going to go to the people I believe on the call. I see some Danny.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Danny with Weatherfield Social Services.
Thank you. I think Camilla's on. Liz Bozinski.
Good morning, Liz Bozinski, West Hartford Social Services.
Thank you. Michael Hines.
Good morning, Michael Hines, Director of Pretrial Services for the Judicial Branch.
Thank you. John Basso.
Good morning, everyone. John Basso, American Red Cross.
Thank you. I think some people went on to call and they were on the screen before. Tammy Freeberg.
Good morning, Tammy Freeberg from the Village for Families and Children.
Thank you. Julie Rivaz.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Nice to meet you. Julie Rivaz, Director of Administration at the Court Support Services Division in the Judicial Branch.
Thank you. Who am I missing? I think I see Lori, and I don't see your last name. It's getting cut off. Butanaz, I think. Butanaz. You're on the phone, so she may not actually know that she's being called on. And I don't know, is there anyone else I've missed that's on the call? Okay.
Good morning. My name is Mark White. I'm the Director of Adult Probation Services for the Judicial
wonderful.
Branch.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I apologize. Did not see you come on the call. Okay. Wonderful. So thank you all for joining today. We are actually going to now move on to public comment. Is anybody here for public comment? Going once, going twice. Okay, we're moving on. Next, I just want to move on to the approval of the minutes. We've had multiple meetings here in the past. We have met in June and August. Approval of the June 27th, 2023 minutes. So I have a motion to approve those minutes. Can someone make a motion? Because I can't.
I can make a motion. Liz Bozinski, West Hartford.
Wonderful. Thank you, Liz. And can I get a second?
Second, Camilla Hillian Bloomfield.
Thank you. Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposing? Okay. Anybody want to abstain? Okay, Chloe, one abstention. Wonderful. Okay, so the minutes pass. Thank you all. Thank you all for going through our administrative side of things before we get to our presentations today. So now we can move on to our presentations. I want to thank everyone today for their time. We have three amazing presenters here that are each going to talk about how food systems and food insecurity is impacting not only their organization, but how that impacts our region, our communities, and our members. So I wanted to start first with Kelly Davila from Data Haven. She's going to give a presentation on how her work is being impacted. So I will turn it over to Kelly.
Okay, can you guys see the screen? Okay, cool. So I'll be presenting a little bit of information on food insecurity and health outcomes. The data, I think Data Haven has presented to CROG many times before, so I'm not sure if they need an introduction to our organization. We're based in New Haven. We do a lot of research and analysis about different topics in Connecticut. One of the regions that we focus on is the CROG region. So we recently in March released a community well-being index reports, one of which is for the CROG region, but we also have these town and region equity reports now, one of which is available for the CROG region and also 169 towns in Connecticut. So if you haven't had a chance to look at those yet, I highly recommend it. I'll be presenting a little bit of information from that, but there's a lot more, you know, topic-wise in these reports that I'm not covering here. So to kind of jump right into it, one of the things that we look at in our community well-being index reports is how satisfied with life people are, and then what are the kind of causes that go into that? What are the facets of life satisfaction? And we see kind of across the board that food insecurity, or you know, access to food, access to financial stability, access to healthcare, social supports, all of these things contribute to overall life satisfaction. So this chart is kind of telling us, you know, to look at food insecurity for an example. Those who say that they have had difficulty paying for food, 36% of those. Only 36% of the group who said that they have, you know, difficulty accessing food are satisfied with life, compared to 72% who can't afford food. So I'm going to go through some kind of indicators that are related to this and how those aspects are kind of also interrelated with housing and income, and kind of, you know, look at food insecurity as an upstream driver to health consequences. So kind of the top line here, Given inflation over the past like 20 years or so, we have a pretty clear idea that like incomes have dropped over the course of those 20 years statewide, while other costs, things like healthcare, food, transportation, have increased a lot, especially in housing. But some places more than others have been affected by inflation-related. By inflation-related income drops. So we see incomes dropping more in places like Hartford and New Britain, where they're rising in Southington, West Hartford. Poverty overall rose about 2 percentage points over the past 20 years. So this chart kind of gives that a little bit better explanation of this item. So we've been hearing a lot in the news, things like CPI have increased over time, but I think this chart kind of shows that weekly wages are stagnant over the past 20 years. So some people are affected much more than others when it comes to the inflation related, when it comes to different items that are related by inflation. So this is also an indicator from the report that we have, the Town Equity Reports. Household income varies pretty widely by race and ethnicity. We see in the CROG region that white households are out earning black households by about 80%. And then, you know, incomes in the region range from a low of Hartford 37,000 to 135,000 in Simsbury. So only some people are being affected by, you know, only some people with low income are being affected by food insecurity and other issues. So this kind of summarizes that households receiving SNAP benefits, for example, meaning they earn less than two times the federal poverty limit, 50,000 households in the region, another 36,000 households lack a vehicle, then another 36,000 households lack broadband internet, and 33% are a housing cost burden. So all of these things are kind of compound issues that contribute to not only food insecurity and other resource insecurity, but can have consequences down the line in terms of health outcomes. Financial insecurity especially is something that is compounded by or has compound effects that some people are experiencing more than others. For example, Black and Latino adults tend to have much more financial insecurity. That's, you know, whether or not they're just getting by or doing worse than that financially, negative net worth. Food insecurity is one part of that, and transportation insecurity is another. Especially adults earning less than $30,000 in the region, you know, more than half of them are struggling financially. So this financial difficulty, coupled with rising costs of things like healthcare, housing, and food, make it really difficult for people to get ahead if they had fallen behind. Food insecurity in the region is kind of varies by group. You know, as far as statewide values, like we are able to say that disabled people are four times as likely to be food insecure than non-disabled people. Incarceration also increases the likelihood of food insecurity. And town by town, food insecurity is 10 times higher in Hartford than it is in Simsbury. So within the CROG region, those who are housing insecure, about half of them are also food insecure. If they're transportation insecure, 44% of them are also food insecure. Immigrants, 17%, transgender, a full half of the population of the transgender community in the CROG region is food insecure. LGBT population, 30%. And again, anybody who's ever had a family member who's incarcerated, whether or not it's themselves, 20%, 21% are likely to be food insecure. So statewide, this is the most recent data that's available by the US Census Bureau through April of 2023. Food insecurity dropped to the lowest point that it was at in 2021, likely due to pandemic relief programs and stimulus checks, things like that, and has risen then, risen now since to 13% nearly, which is higher than it was pre-pandemic. And of the adults surveyed in the year, April of 2022 to April of 2023, 32% of them said that their kids weren't eating enough food because of food insecurity. 21% gave unaffordability as the reason that they were food insecure, while only 3% said it was transportation related, that they like couldn't get transportation to go buy food. And only 5% of adults were able to access free food in 2023. I know that it's been a big topic that, you know, food pantries and the availability of free food is insufficient in most places in the country, and that's certainly true here as well. So all of these things, food insecurity is one kind of component of a healthy lifestyle, right? So having good nutrition is related to a lower likelihood of some poor health outcomes. So some of these risk factors like food insecurity, and especially kind of the consequential drivers of that, obesity has a complex interrelationship with food insecurity. So we tend to see those things hand in hand. So what we're seeing in this chart is Black populations and Latino populations especially tend to have elevated rates of these risk factors and lower levels of self-rated health. So they're less likely to say that they have good health, but they're more likely to have these additional risk factors. We also see in our research that people who are food insecure are three times as likely to have diabetes, and that it's also, again, correlated with other health behaviors like smoking and low exercise that have, again, consequences for an individual's health. So this is kind of demonstrating that when you have these like compound risk factors, as well as, you know, kind of different inequities driven by like housing insecurity, transportation insecurity, food insecurity, what we see across the board is that, for example, in diabetes, Black people across most age groups are twice as likely as white adults to have diabetes, and a full half or more have hypertension once you hit the age of 50. So these are issues that are linked in many ways to food access and good nutrition. And then also once you kind of once you have these illnesses, things like diabetes and hypertension, then again, the cost of your healthcare becomes much higher. The consequences of different diseases can be much more severe. So it has this kind of snowball effect. In addition to that, there's a lot of barriers to healthcare that some people face who also face food insecurity. So we see here that, again, Black and Latino populations are much more likely to have delayed or skipped healthcare, much less likely to have seen a dentist recently, and more likely to be uninsured. So again, all of that is compounded with the fact that you may have additional health risks or health needs that are not being met. So again, to go back to this chart about life satisfaction, what we're seeing is that a lot of that has to do with income, right? That's not a surprise to anybody, that to have access to more resources gives you more opportunities to have experiences that lead to more life satisfaction. But we do see in here, close to the bottom of the list, the populations that struggle the most with things like food and housing insecurity are also the least likely to report that they are satisfied with life, regardless of income. So that's, you know, looking at just the CROG region, Hartford, and the state overall, again, the people who are most affected by things like food insecurity and housing insecurity are least likely to say that they're satisfied with life. So that was a very, very fast overview. I'll take any questions unless Robin wants to hold those until all three presenters go.
We could actually, does anyone have a question right now specific to Kelly's slides? If not, we'll move on to FoodShare. Okay, I think we'll move on to Paul Shipman from FoodShare then. Thank you, Kelly. And if you could hold on just in case there's questions at the end, I appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you. Paul, do you have any slides you'd like to share or share your screen?
I do.
Wonderful. Paul does that, he'll get his slides up, but I wanted to introduce him. Paul Shipman will be here speaking from FoodShare. And if you have any questions, you could actually put them in the chat or you can hold them to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. I have too many screens open apparently, but as I fiddle with this, I will just say that what Kelly spoke about is very much. Okay, can you see my screen now? Okay. So what Kelly shared is very much, I think, part of what we experience and see in the neighbors we serve every day. So a little bit about us. Connecticut Food Share is now the only Feeding America affiliated food bank serving Connecticut. I think folks in the CROG region are very familiar with Food Share as the food bank based in Bloomfield. And about 2 years ago, Food Share and Connecticut Food Bank came together in an effort to better serve the entire state and to share the resources that we have to have a greater impact. You've heard a little bit about what's going on in the community in terms of hunger, and our goal is to not just distribute food, but to make a real informed and equitable response to hunger. And that includes ways to shorten the lines at many of our programs. So it's more than just food, and you'll see as we talk a little bit here. A brief snapshot of what Kelly has already touched on. There are approximately 400,000 people, according to Feeding America's data, in the state that are food insecure, and almost 100,000 of those folks are just in Hartford County. Of those Hartford County food insecure individuals, More than 24,000 are children. And these are, as Kelly said, these are numbers that have risen. Feeding America's data tends to lag a bit. So some of what Kelly has presented is in a way a more current number, but we have data that we work with from Feeding America, and folks might find it useful to visit the website map.feedingamerica.org. And you can parse the numbers for counties across the nation. And we look at factors such as age and race, and there's some very good information there. The way Connecticut Food Share works in terms of its core project of distributing food, we source food from a variety of sources. Government commodities, TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which is a federal commodities program, and CTNAP, which is Connecticut provided funding to purchase food with Connecticut routes and distribution, as it were. And we also secure food industry donations from retailers, distributors, manufacturers, and we also both receive donations from Connecticut farms and through a federally funded program that came out of the pandemic, we began a program of purchasing more food from Connecticut farmers with an emphasis on emerging and BIPOC farmers. And that is a relatively recent addition to our food mix. The food is sorted and redistributed from three warehouses, our main warehouse in Wallingford, Bloomfield, which folks know from food share days, and a smaller facility in Bridgeport. And we work with about 500 partner programs and our own mobile food pantries. Talking about some of the things that Kelly mentioned, I think what's interesting to note is we have been listening to our neighbors who struggle with food insecurity, and we have been having listening sessions around the state, including some sites in Hartford County. We have been working from some research developed by Feeding America, but these hew pretty closely to some of the points Kelly touched on. And I think some of the barriers for folks who are receiving food are, first of all, awareness, knowing where programs are available to help them in their communities, when they're open, how it works, and the oftentimes complicated and confusing process of applying for public benefits. So we have been working to address some of that by increasing our social outreach and our means of contacting folks with text messaging tools and with street signage and with other information that will help people become aware of services. And we work with our partner programs to do that. Physical access. These are a range of things. It's pantries having limited or daytime opening hours that make it hard for folks to access them, especially folks who are in the ALIS population, the working poor, as they are also called, folks who are struggling to hold down, you know, one or more jobs and put food on the table. Transportation. There are many communities where public transportation is difficult to access, and they may not have, as Kelly said, reliable transportation of their own. Disabled individuals have trouble accessing some pantries that tend to be in older buildings that may not be fully compliant. And of course, language barriers. There are, I think, more than 80 languages spoken in Connecticut. It's a difficult process for people who aren't fully versed. Stigma is a familiar barrier for folks who are in this world. We don't create a culture that supports an understanding that people need help at times in their lives. Folks are embarrassed. They're worried about being spotted. A lot of people have told us that they seek food outside their own communities because they're afraid they might run into a neighbor. Some are fearful of providing too much information in pantry paperwork, and they are afraid that it might affect other federal benefits. There are folks who are undocumented and are fearful that this will put someone on their trail. We work with our programs to address a lot of these experiences, and also the individual experiences of feeling welcomed. It's a traumatic situation that many find themselves in, and very emotionally charged. So trying to help people feel welcomed, trying to provide people food choice wherever we can, especially where it affects their health with dietary needs and allergies. We do work hard to address preferences and culturally preferred foods, because those can help people better prepare foods that they're familiar with and increase their likelihood of finding things that they like and can use. We've worked with our network to address as many of these concerns as we can, encouraging programs to stay open more often, to explore changing hours where they can. In communities where we have a number of programs that are located near each other, we encourage them to talk to each other and maybe stagger hours so that people have more points of access. We have had a great deal of success in inspiring our programs by helping them to share good practices with some of their colleagues in this work. And that's everything from greeting people and understanding how folks value good signage that helps them find their way into a building, to looking at ways that we can help people get groceries home through programs that support delivery, or order ahead tools that some of our pantries are beginning to explore. So we have a network of about 500 programs across the state. These are pantries, emergency shelters, day programs for children and seniors, and they are really the last mile in our food network. And we work to provide them with food and with some of these supports that help them better serve their communities. Our mobile pantry, we're now at about 113 sites across the state, where we serve a large number of households with food that comes to them and is available on a no questions asked basis, a way that we can get more fresh food out, because it's in a lot of ways a just-in-time delivery system, and helps us account for some of our programs that have fresh food storage restrictions. They just don't have the space or the mechanical resources to keep a lot of perishable food. So the mobiles help a lot. And as you can see here, we have a texting service. If you text the word food share to 85511 and follow the prompts to enter your community, you'll get a written text response listing some programs near you and the dates and times those mobiles happen. It's also a tool to get information out in the unfortunate event we might have to cancel them. One of the other ways we reach out beyond just our own food is through a SNAP outreach program that helps folks apply for SNAP benefits. And one of the important changes that has recently happened post-pandemic, and we're very pleased about this, is that the income thresholds have increased. So more households in Connecticut are eligible for SNAP. It's 300% of federal poverty level now, and we are hoping that we can continue to reach folks. We advertise through search, through a grant program from Google. We advertise on social media and try to reach folks, encouraging them to contact us. We'll help them navigate the SNAP application in a 30-minute phone call that we can schedule at the client's convenience. And SNAP is such a huge program. It is really the backbone of reducing food insecurity in the U.S. For every meal that a food bank can provide through its network, SNAP provides 9. It is one of the most reliable ways to help lift families out of food insecurity and stretch their dollars so that they can perhaps devote some to healthcare and rent and to add to their food budget. We hope to serve as many or more people this year as we did last year. It is a program that we have beefed up recently, and help is available in English and Spanish. So overall, our impact in terms of food served, last year we provided food for about 40 million meals across the state and about 10.3 million meals in Hartford County alone. Our goal is to continue to do this and to turn out food that is as nutritiously valuable as possible, as healthful as possible, as culturally preferred as possible. But at the same time, to work with partners, some of whom are on the call today, who can help us make referrals to other services. We hold monthly webinars with our network, giving them information about other programs so that they can make more warm referrals to the clients they serve and not have to duplicate efforts, but help people get out of the line as well as providing them some food. So two things I would leave you with today that you can help is sharing the information about what we offer. And the key items there are our SNAP outreach line, 860-856-HELP, our mobile pantry texting service. We maintain on our website, ctfoodshare.org, resources for folks who are seeking food. And we know that we're not 100% of any network partners' food supply or of any household's food supply. And so we want to encourage people to look around, seek help, and to be informed. And you can get the most up-to-date information about our network by visiting 211 or calling 211. As part of our contract with our network partners, we ask them to maintain their listings in an updated manner with 211. So those are things that folks can do to help. With that, I will stop sharing my screen as soon as I can find out how to do that. There we go. I talked fast, and I hope I provided some interesting info. My slides will be available from Robin as well, and we would love to hear from any of you as well. You can always reach me by email at the food bank, pshipman@ctfoodshare.org.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. And I can actually add your contact information to the chat. I put the food map in the chat as well if anyone is interested. So does anyone have any questions, or are we able to move on to New Britain Roots, which is actually a great follow-up to what you left off with as far as food, growing your own food, you know, making the community sustainable in themselves. And Joey Listro from New Britain Roots has a wonderful program that he has going on there, and like to share some information about what they're doing in their community. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Joey.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to share my screen. Let me know if you can see that. All right. So good morning. My name is Joey Listro. I'm the executive director for New Britain Roots. We are a community-based organization here in New Britain. I want to first start off by thanking both Kelly and Paul, because our work intersects quite a bit. For one, Data Haven has really equipped us and other nonprofit organizations with really important tools to advocate for programs and services, especially when it comes to obtaining grant funds and getting the community to really understand what food security looks like in our community. And then FoodShare has been a longtime partner with New Britain Roots. In fact, as I sit here at my desk today and look out my window, the mobile food pantry is right outside in the parking lot. We do have a line of about 40 or 50 people this morning. They've been a partner for us with us for a number of years, including the Hunger Action Team, which has been meeting here in New Britain. It must be at least for 15 years now. And FoodShare was instrumental in convening the Hunger Action Team and getting people in the community together to talk about essential services. The food pantries created a Meals and More calendar, which describes what days the different food pantries are open, where people can seek assistance, as well as any other resources and events. I'm going to talk a little bit about who we are. Our organization's mission statement is that we cultivate community connections and equitable access to quality food through empowerment and learning with the people who grow, prepare, and eat food in New Britain. So my personal background is in agriculture. I was born and raised in New Britain, but went off to be a farmer for a number of years and fell in love with farming, and then also began to become interested in urban agriculture and moved into the work of growing food in cities. So when I started New Britain Roots 8 years ago, we started with a threefold mission. Food security is one pillar of that mission, in which we help run a farmer's market, a mobile market, which I'll go into more detail. We offer programs for SNAP and WIC recipients, as well as donate quite a bit of produce. Urban agriculture is how do we transform different spaces in our highly developed community to grow more food. So that looks like community gardens, aquaponic systems, hydroponics, school gardens, greenhouses, as well as building raised bed gardens for seniors and people with disabilities. And then the third pillar of our mission is in education. So we offer after school programs, summer programs, a youth apprenticeship called City Growers, in which our high school students are paid to do a lot of that garden work, summer camp program, and a program with our senior center, using a greenhouse at the senior center to grow food. For this presentation, I'm going to focus really on the main food security work we do, which is providing more access in our town with fresh fruits and vegetables, as well as the SNAP program that we offer and the donations we make. Really quickly, I just wanted to emphasize the importance of farmers markets. They really do support communities in a variety of ways. First is they stimulate local economies. So local farmers help create full-time jobs, and the money that they're earning at a farmers market usually goes back into the community. They preserve farmland and rural livelihoods. One really eye-opening fact is the United States loses an acre of farmland every minute to development. So that's pretty startling. And in Connecticut, you know, open space is a very limited resource. So buying from local farmers, whether it's food share buying directly for distribution, or if you're attending a farmers market, is really important to keep those farmers in business. Increasing access to fresh food. So we know if we shop at farmers markets, we're typically buying fresh, local, healthy food. And I'll talk a little bit about how our SNAP program enhances that. And we're supporting healthy communities. So New Britain Roots has been operating a mobile farmers market for the past 8 years. This is a photo of it. So it's basically a farm stand on wheels. I believe the other city in this crowd is Hartford that operates a mobile farmers market. And what we do is we aggregate produce from local farmers. We work with about five. And then we bring our market to different locations throughout the city during the season, which usually runs June through October for us. And we set up a farm stand and we sell directly to the public. This is our an example of how we identify the different locations we may want to bring our mobile farmers market to. So if you're interested in the term food deserts, which you're probably familiar with now, you can go to the USDA website and search for something called the Food Access Research Atlas. And there's a lot of different tools on the website, which will help identify different census tracts in your town to see if there is low food access in those particular areas. So this is an image of New Britain, and generally speaking, the areas that are highlighted have low access to healthy local food, which really means they may have low access to getting to a grocery store, supermarket. In some cases, like this area over here, they have low access to a supermarket, also have low access to a personal vehicle to get to a supermarket. So this is an example of our schedule that we offer for this year. So we go to these different locations throughout the week. We do a number of pop-up locations, so this isn't the full schedule that we do offer. But for instance, this is public housing on Mondays. We do HRA in New Britain, which is a Head Start preschool program. And we go from 3 to 5 because that's typically when parents are picking up their kids, so they're able to shop with us. Thursday is senior housing, located near downtown New Britain. And then we also bring our truck to the city's farmers market on Wednesdays. So we really try to meet people where they're at. And convenience is a really important factor of how we decide where we're gonna bring the truck, along with who our community partners are. And how well they can advertise that will be there to their clients. A little bit about what's on the market. So some of our partner farms are Cold Spring Brook in Berlin, Eddy Farm in Newington, Rogers Orchard, Southington. We do get local honey from Simsbury, and we do grow some of the food that we sell. Most of the food at our school gardens goes directly back to the schools. But over the summer months, when school's not in session, our youth program will harvest the food and put it for sale on our mobile market. And this was, so mobile markets have probably, close to 100, 150 mold markets across the US. So there was a survey done with many of the markets, and I just wanted to share a little information about the findings of the survey. So many mobile markets will go to senior housing. So we know seniors have a harder time accessing local supermarkets or farmers markets. So, and then the transportation, you know, to get there. So our market does go to one senior housing development in New Britain, as well as many mobile markets throughout the country choose to go there as well. Neighborhood common spaces are important. So we're looking for spaces where people congregate, people may have better access walking to or biking to. There might be in parks, things like that. Community-based organizations, this is another big one. So we go to community health center. We also will go to the YWCA. We go to organizations that have a lot of foot traffic, and that usually we tend to see quite a bit of interaction with customers. Medical centers, school, daycare centers. So we do stop at one elementary school in New Britain, and we stop there during dismissal time. So again, we're trying to reach parents when they're picking up their kids from school at the end of the day. We also can reach staff at those schools as well. We can only go to one because we only have one truck, and we could probably benefit from having three or four more. This graph shows about how many customers are served per stop. So many markets will stop for 1 to 2 hours. Most of our stops are about 2 hours long, and we typically receive about 20 to 25 customers per stop, which is a pretty low number. And I will say that most models, most organizations that run mobile markets are nonprofit organizations. Our program wouldn't exist without grant funding. It just wouldn't work in a for-profit model. At the end of the day, our goal is to not lose any money from the produce that we're purchasing directly from farmers. So the cost of our operation to pay staff, to pay for the vehicle maintenance, the fuel, that's typically covered through grant funds, but the produce has to be made up in the sales of the produce from our truck. And then this will illustrate that most mobile markets are funded through grants, as well as the market sales as a funding source. They're not really, I can probably speak for every mobile market operator, they're really not making much money off the produce that they sell, if they're making any money. And some organizations do rely on donations, especially from partner organizations that host a market. They may donate to have the market there for that day. So you may have seen signs like this throughout Connecticut. So we partner with End Hunger Connecticut on the USNAP We Match. This is also called Connecticut Fresh Match. And it's a program that allows farmers markets to double every dollar used in SNAP benefits. So another way to say that is we give 50% off for people who purchase fresh fruits and vegetables at the market. And that's done right at the point of sale. For some farmers, basically you can come up to us with your EBT card after you're done picking out your produce, and then we take half off, and then we'll charge the EBT card. Then we're reimbursed. We report that to End Hunger Connecticut. We're reimbursed through the grant. A lot of farmers markets, including the one here in New Britain, will use a token system. And this allows for one stand, such as this, to handle the EBT transactions. So what will happen is a customer will bring their EBT card. They say they would like to spend about $40 today at the farmer's market. The EBT card is charged $20, and the customer is issued $40 in tokens. For New Britain, we call these V-Bucks. They receive two types of tokens. One is a SNAP token, which is equals the amount of their transaction, and the other token is a match token, which is the incentive to use at the market. This is some results from our gold market in 2021. So we served about 1,700 customers throughout New Britain. 58% of those that shopped with us are low income. And 55% of our SNAP customers came back to shop with us at least two more times throughout our season. We were able to match 2,300. I'll tell you, as of today, we're over $3,000 in what we're able to match for customers who've shopped this year. So that program keeps growing quite a bit. We also take senior checks and WIC checks, which as of this year are now cards that the state issues. The Connecticut Department of Agriculture issues cards for low-income seniors as well as WIC recipients. They have about $24 on them, and people who receive these cards are able to redeem them at participating farmers markets. Prior to that, it was paper checks. And then I'm just going to end with a few photos of our work. So besides the farmers market work, we do school gardens and greenhouses. This is an example of one of our greenhouses at our local middle school, Slade Middle School. We have our youth program work out in the greenhouses. The food that is grown across all of our 12 school gardens and greenhouses is either used in the culinary program, in the high school cafeteria, or sold on our mobile market, or donated directly to local food pantries. So we do kind of weave in a lot of different elements to the food security work that we do in New Britain. And here's my information if you'd like to reach out. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Joey, for that. I put your information in here, but I appreciate you putting the additional links in there. Does anyone have any questions for any of our presenters today? We had a lot of wonderful information, and hopefully I see a lot of collaboration already between some of these organizations, which is very encouraging, and I think there's room for even more growth. So does anyone have any questions, though, at this point in time? Well, we have these wonderful people on the call. You could put it in the chat, too, if you'd like to, or raise your hand. If not, I will also be sending out the material. Sorry, I thought someone thought somebody had a question. I'll be sending out the materials with everybody's contact information, so please feel free to reach out and connect with any of the individuals that presented today. We actually are looking to do more of these meetings through our Human Services Coordinating Council based on your feedback and what is important to your community. We have a question from Jacob.
Hello, how are you? Question on like circular economy things and how you maybe fit into those, or if you see any of that kind of development coming along within either our region or New Britain, but making sure that byproducts are being used and that maybe you're getting some byproducts in terms of composting, that good stuff. But what have you been seeing?
Joey, do you want to, I see you, okay.
I can share just quickly. I think we're, the state as a whole is pretty far behind with composting, but there is quite a bit of interest, at least for those that attend our farmers market, to learn how to compost and even participate in a compost collection program. But the funding, the funding isn't there, and I think our municipality is kind of moving in that direction slowly, trying to figure out how it works, but maybe waiting for other towns to implement something before they go all in. We are able to work with our shoppers to let them know that like every school garden we have has a composting site, so if they have some fruit and vegetable waste that they can drop it off there. But as far as I think we definitely need a program at the municipal level.
Paul, did you want to follow up? Sure.
Yeah, I'll jump in because there are a couple of things that we do at the food bank level. You know, when you're dealing especially with donated perishable food, it's often very near the end of its useful life for folks. And so we try to get it out as quickly as we can to our programs. I mentioned the mobiles are kind of a just-in-time way to get food out and to further reduce spoilage, but we do see spoilage. And what we're able to do with a lot of the produce is we have arrangements with a couple of farmers, and that food becomes animal feed. So we're reducing that part of the stream. We also have worked in the past with the biofuel facility in Southington, which helps us with packaged product. They're able to strip the food out of cans, boxes, et cetera, and create energy, compost, other kind of gardening materials from that food. It's not without cost. And that is a barrier for a lot of organizations. We do a lot with recycling of cardboard because we get so much of it in with our food. We know it's a challenge for a lot of our smaller programs. They want to do more, but they don't have the human resources, even with dedicated volunteers, to bale and prep enough cardboard to dispose of it affordably. So, we're trying to explore some options there. But, Joey mentioned some of the municipal angles here. If communities are doing some recycling and they can maybe offer at an institutional level some of those resources to, charitable food programs and other nonprofits in town, that ups the number and eases the financial burden, that would be huge. I know we have programs in Enfield and many other communities that are clamoring. So we try to close the loop wherever we can, Jacob.
Thank you. I like that. Thank you for tying that all back in, and especially the municipal angle of how we can all work better together within our communities to bring this into a, almost like a zero waste at this point in time. So we do have one more question I see in the chat, and this one is for Joey. If you see that, the question is regarding the mobile farmers markets. Are the farmers market coupons from the Department of Agriculture a payment method?
Yes, they probably represent around 25% of our overall sales. And one thing I didn't mention in the presentation was a unique challenge our cities face with farmers markets, which is many farmers choose not to be a vendor in the cities because they do better sales-wise in more of our wealthier communities and suburbs. So without this incentive of the coupons from the state, as well as the SNAP incentive of the 50% off, I think most of our cities would be void of any farmers markets. So like our mission, as well as the mission of other similar organizations across Connecticut, is that food is a human right, and we truly believe that no matter your income, you should also have access to fresh local food. And without these programs existing, I don't think we would be running farmers markets in our cities.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's very important aspect to look into, being that we have a lot of food deserts in across this country, and including in our own community. So how do we get those services, those essential food products out, and healthy products out to people that need them? If any other questions, please feel free to reach out. We are actually going to be having another meeting in December. December 19th will be our next meeting for the Human Services Coordinating Council. I will be sending out that save the date. Our topic, our overarching topic that day will be homelessness and the impacts of homelessness on our communities and on the individuals that are facing homelessness. So I will be getting that out. And if you have any other topics you'd like to see us discuss that are impacting your region, your community, your organizations, please, please reach out to me. And we want to keep this group going. The momentum is fantastic, and we have a great group of collaborators on here. We like to see that working together of all different cross functions, agencies, municipalities. Let's keep this going. So thank you all for your time. I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 11:02. Thank you all for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.